This is Week in Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. This has been a week in which Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott apologized, got criticized, said he was sorry, finally just had to say he was leaving. Senator Lott did not deliver this news in person, so therefore we don't have any audio clip to play you. Instead, he issued a written statement saying, quote, in the interest of pursuing the best possible agenda for the future of our country, he would not seek to remain as Majority Leader of the U.S. Senate, but said he would, quote, continue to serve the people of Mississippi in the Senate. Dan Shore joins us. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And, Dan, now that Senator Lott has stepped down and someone else seems destined to step up, where do you see the events of this past week leading?
Well, the doctor is in. That's to say that 51 Republicans will join in a conference call on Monday, and they will, I think I can safely say, they will elect Senator Bill Frist, perhaps by acclamation, perhaps even with the vote of Senator Lott. Could I add something to that? Mm-hmm. Because this week started and ended with a departure. On Monday, there was Al Gore leaving the presidential race, and then on Friday, Senator Lott leaving the position of Republican leader in the Senate. Remarkable is the different reactions to the two. Gore left with rave reviews for all the grace that he was showing, and Lott left under a dark cloud that looked very much like disgrace. You know, somebody should write a resignation manual. Maybe Noel Coward might call it Design for Leaving. Mm. How do you, when you have to quit, how do you quit? How do you manage?
Noel Coward is gone, Dan, and no doubt is receiving that news very badly where he rests.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. Noel, forgive me. Yeah. But, you know, Senator Lott, with his multiple apologies, his last-minute conversion even to affirmative action, mm-hmm. it didn't quite manage to get any kind of the kind of grace you should have when you leave.
I'm interested in the kinetics of how this developed and what it might have to say about public life and politics and the way these things run in this country. Senator Lott made his remarks at Strom Thurmond's 100th birthday party a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
This was on television, cable carrier at least C-SPAN. There were reporters in attendance. There were public officials in attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking for myself, I wasn't there, but I didn't read past the first couple of paragraphs in the news accounts. This is something that the news industry missed for days, those remarks, and for that matter, the people in that room let Senator Lott leave the room without thinking he'd committed a terrible gaffe.
I think that's right, and it really was terribly interesting how slow everybody was to react. Maybe the press needed to have somebody give them the spin before they knew what to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
It took a little, everybody was a little bit late catching on to the great implications of what Senator Lott had said about the problems that we would not have had we elected in 1948 a segregationist who, among other things, by the way, opposed an anti-lynching law.
Yeah.
Okay. That was one of
that
the...
That was one of the...
Well, at first, I think it was the conservative columnist who first began to recognize the significance of what Lott had so mindlessly said.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there on, it became a drama mainly among conservatives and within the Republican Party as they blanched at the thought of all their outreach to minorities being undone by this one totally insensitive remark. From then on, Lott's departure, be it by resignation or be it by a challenge, his being outvoted, seemed to be almost inevitable as you look back on it. If it didn't come very quickly, it's mainly because there are funny things that happened under these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Senators did not want, for example, to commit themselves against Lott in case he might survive, and that would endanger their pork and their committee assignments. So they had to be very, very careful and play an intricate game of I will if you will, and do that very, very gently until they found out, yes, it could be done, and then they could all do it.
Let me ask you about the role of the president. Was there one?
Huh. Well, I think there was very quick recognition in the White House that a protracted struggle over this would endanger not only outreach to minorities, but the Bush agenda, too. And so, but it had to be done with latex gloves on to leave no White House fingerprint. So the president said that although he didn't like what Senator Lott had said, he was not going to ask Lott to quit. What then happened? We heard from the president's brother.
Mm-hmm.
Why Florida had a very important stake in it, I do not know. Then you heard from the president's secretary of state,
mm-hmm.
Colin Powell. None of these people would certainly have spoken if the White House didn't want them to. And then when Senator Lott came out and said he had a good telephone conversation with President Bush, Ari Fleischer said, no, he hadn't. He hadn't talked to President Bush. So this was all a little game being played, but being played very carefully. If the president had openly opposed Lott and he then survived, that would have been another Republican disaster.
Let's move to events as they unfolded about weapons inspections in Iraq this week. Chief UN Weapons Inspector Hans Blix and U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell had, I think what we might fairly characterize as an uncommon agreement this week. They both said that Iraq's 12,000-page weapons declaration was inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
What did you see as happening next?
Well, what happens now is, first of all, the United States is apparently prepared to turn over some of its own intelligence information to the inspectors, which might help them look in places they have not yet looked at.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the next big event in this continuing drama is trying to get Iraqi scientists out of the country so they can be interrogated safely. Hans Blix seems to be dubious about the idea, doesn't see himself as running an abduction agency.
Mm-hmm.
Saddam Hussein's government hasn't said for sure, but it looks as though they will say, we're not going to let our people go. So I think we may now be moving towards the next stage in this situation. That is a stage where the Bush administration can claim that both conditions have been met that you would call material breach. That is to say, not only an unsatisfactory declaration, but then a lack of cooperation with the inspectors. Those are the two conditions that appear to make material breach. It's kind of funny about material breach,
yeah,
by the way, is that it's a phrase which didn't mean anything until now has now come to mean material breach becomes now the grounds for invasion. I used to think material breach was just some guy who overate and busted out of his jacket.
Maybe it's Saddam Hussein who overate and is busting out of his jacket. How do you assess U.S. military preparedness right now?
Well, I'm not a big military expert. From what I get, it's this way. We have about now a build up to about 50,000 troops, Air Force, infantry in the general area. They think 100,000. They can have 100,000 in a month. By the end of January, American forces should be ready. Now, I'm talking only about readiness. I am not predicting whether it will or will not happen.
And finally, we got intelligence reports this week that suggest Iraq might, Saddam Hussein might adopt a scorched earth policy if he felt his regime was getting changed. If we use that term of art, it could set fire to oil fields, destroying power plants, wipe out food stores, and create a humanitarian crisis that could complicate and even stall invasion plans. He would need the cooperation of the Iraqi military, obviously, to do that. How compelling do you find this scenario?
Well, whenever you hear see about some kind of leak from intelligence sources, the first thing to ask is who benefits from the leak.
Mm-hmm.
This is a leak that indicates that terrible, terrible things were happening, humanitarian crisis, all the oil fields blown up and on fire and all the rest of it. And the general effect of it is to make you think twice and perhaps three times about the wisdom of actually going and doing that. So I simply imagine that there's somebody in the administration who would like to put us on notice that it would be a very, very dangerous thing to go in there. And I think this is part of the continuing drama of an administration which itself is divided about what to do when it comes to using force. And in that, you will now get these various interesting leaks.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dan Shore.
Mm-hmm.